This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the best small winery in Canada, Moon Cursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tarriga Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online by mid to late April. Moon Cursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. The byproduct of hosting a show like this is that you get to make friends with people along the way, whether they're musicians, well, on the music side, in terms of food and wine, they're either chefs or staff, owners or winemakers or farmers. We lost one of the great ones on Friday, April the 2nd, Christopher Carl Jentsch. Chris Jentsch. His label, CC Jentsch. One of the good guys. Just a wonderful man. Had a basic farmer's instinct. Treated people well. Made light of himself as not so much being the winemaker or the owner, but a tractor driver. And I talked to him over the years because I just liked the man a lot. Well, first of all, I loved his wine. And then I found that the wine reflected the man and those around him. I just loved talking to Chris Jentsch. I think the first time I met him was in 2015, a couple of days after his Syrah, his 2013 Syrah, had beaten everyone at the Judgment of BC, when six BC Syrahs and six World Syrahs were put together blind by a room full of very highly qualified judges, and they chose CC Jentsch 2013 Syrah as the one, the champion. Quite remarkable, which is what the judgment was all about. So I'm talking to him at first about that Syrah, and then a couple of days after the judgment, and then 2016 at Bloom, the big pour in Vancouver, I think it was May 20, and in 2019 with Val Tate at the Vancouver Wine Festival. Again, he will be missed. Here's a tribute to the man himself, Chris Jentsch, and his winery, CC Jentsch, as he says, Jentsch on the Golden Mile bench.
Well, I got the same thing. We've been battling that since we started, actually. You know, we're a very old-time family since 29 here in the Valley, but always on the wholesale side of things. And so even when we do, when that wine won the platinum a few months earlier, it was the same thing. You know, who are these guys? In fact, so now on my billboard, I've got one coming into Penticton and one into Oliver. It says, who and where the heck are these guys? So we're, you know, to brand a name that's not as common as Henry or anything like that. So we're making fun of it now, and so, but slowly, you know, we get these recognitions, and people are getting to know us. You know, and Amber, our winemaker, is just doing a great job. She's making these spectacular wines that people are starting to notice.
I knew it was going to be tough to draw you out. CC Jentsch, and I'm talking with Chris Jentsch, who's the viticulturist and a co-owner, along with the person who actually runs the whole thing, Betty. And
you got that right.
Know that, Chris. Now, what feedback, Chris, did you get from the judges' comments that told you were on the right track? What were they saying about the Syrah?
We got a lot of positive feedback. It's just a wonderful glass of wine. The 12 had won a gold medal previously at the Nationals, and then the 13 has now got this platinum and the Judgment of BC, and the 14s, we just tried them in the cellar. I can hardly wait to have a whole flight of them. It's 14 is promising to be even more spectacular, in my opinion. They're just unbelievable.
Yeah. Wow. Chris, I saw you 2 days after this announcement came down, and you were hiding on your tractor because the phone wouldn't stop ringing, which I thought was kind of unusual. How many cases did you have in the tasting room, and how many do you have left now?
Well, you know, the Syrah is one of our smaller SKUs. 2013 was a bit more than most. But I tell you, the response we're getting, especially just on our online store, is just fantastic. Every day there's more and more orders. It's almost like a grass fire that's just accelerating. It's a nice thing, nice position to be in. I have to say, it's very nice.
Chris and Betty Yench are the viticulturist and co-owners. And yes, there are helicopters in the air, probably news crews shooting the vineyards. Congratulations for winning the judgment of BC, but you were always in front of the pack, and it's just a confirmation.
He is CC Yench, and this is Bloom, 2016, downtown Vancouver. Chris Yench won the Syrah competition last year, and everybody's been talking about him ever since. We are at Bloom, and he is pouring the Syrah 2014, the Viognier 2015, the Chase 2013, and the Quest 2015. How did the 2014 Syrah turn up?
It's sitting there in the queue. It's in the. We got a few cases to work through of the 13 yet, and then the 14 Syrah is sitting there, ready to go. And it's
well, the 2013 won the judgment.
Yes.
The judgment of BC. So. What are your expectations for it?
You know what? It's a slightly different wine. I think it's just an excellent wine, and I'm ready barrel testing the 15s that we're just starting to get into, the earlier stages of the storage and that. But the whole 3-4 years have been excellent for those wines. They're slightly different. It's like a family. You got 5 great kids, and they're
all an uncle. And an uncle.
Yeah.
All right. Tell us about the Chase. What's the blend?
Okay, so the Chase is a 5 varietal. It's predominantly made up equally of both Cabernets, Merlot, and then Petit Verdot and Malbec. And so the 13, we're still got healthy inventory, but it's becoming better and better by the week. It's just. Unbelievable, and 14 is sitting there, and we have 15s, and that it's just a wonderful inventory we have now. We finally now can, really let the wine sit, and they're just really becoming nice.
What's in that blend?
What do you mean, percentage-wise? So roughly 32% Cab Sauv, 32% Cab Franc. And the same with Merlot, and then about 2 and 2. If that adds up, it's roughly that Petit Verdot and Malbec.
And what's in the Quest?
The Quest is a blend between Viognier, Chardonnay, and Gewurztraminer.
So you want world domination. You want to own...
Yeah. Well, where I live in Summerland, now I have a vineyard in Summerland where we grow the Chardonnay. And so it's just a beautiful spot to grow Chardonnay. So the blend is... it was a solution to this little sliver of Gewurztraminer I had, and at first you think, does it work? And it just enough to give it a little splash at the end, which is just wonderful. And then we put some Viognier in there, and it's just a wonderful patio sipper.
So we're a year removed from winning the Judgment of BC, and your Syrah won, beat all comers. What effect did it have on the winery and you?
I think it put a real spotlight on us. But when I look at who. Just to be in that competition, whether I can, is a big honor. If you look at those wines that are there, they're all excellent. And on any given day, I think they, any of those wines could have won. I just fortunate that we did well, and it really helped us, along with our branding, being a young winery. It really sort of, it brought Terry David Mulligan to the wine shop.
No way.
And
I thought he retired.
Yeah, no, I thought so too. And then, there he was, looking as good as ever.
Thank you, man. Thanks. CC Yench, what's the website?
CCYenchCellars.com.
Okay. And Yench, by the way, J-E-N-T-S-C-H, like bench. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much, Terry.
Two of my best friends in the whole freaking wine world. Truly. Right here, in a nutshell. Val Tate from Bench 1775 and from Yench on the Golden Mile Bench. CC Yench, that's the one and only Chris Yench.
Yeah.
Welcome
Hi,
to the
Jerry.
Show. Hi, guys.
Hi.
How do you like the, how many times have you, Val?
How do you like this room? I just came over here and saw this window, and I'm like, are you gobsmacked?
Kind of love the room.
Yeah.
If how many, I get into radio, Terry, can I get a gig like this?
No.
Like
you how many times have you been here, Val?
Six times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chris?
It's my third time.
Okay.
Yes.
Were you difficult?
And it's a day-to-day thing with me. You know, they say, Chris, one more day and we'll give you a go at it.
I'm just turning the C.C. Jentsch bottle. This is a Small Lot Series Merlot 2015. Yes. Didn't we forget about Merlot, Chris?
Yes, I brought it back, and I'm glad we did. It's a beautiful vintage, you know, that we did it with the 15, and very happy with it. Yeah.
Where's the Syrah in all of this? Are you pouring
it? The Syrah is at home.
So what are you pouring at the table?
All our Small Lot Bordeaux-style type varieties, you know, so we've got our Malbec here. We've got both the Cabernet Sauvignon and the Franc here,
yep.
Chardonnay. And no, the Syrah is left at home. We're in between vintages, so.
Define Small Lot.
About 200 cases, so about, you know, 4 to 6 barrels if they make it. And then we, you know, we test them, and if they're good, really good, then we make them into a Small Lot.
And you're a grower. Are you growing all of these, or are you purchasing?
No, we grow them all. Yeah. Yeah, you bet.
Good on you. How are your tractor skills these days?
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I'm on top of my game in that regard.
You are a great tractor driver.
No. I don't think there's anybody better, really.
you're probably right, actually. No, you're probably right.
C.C. Jentsch is the label. Chris Jentsch is the guy. He's the farmer. He's the guy. Actually, you have a winemaking assistant, do you not?
Yes. Yes, so Paula Cooper's there, and right. Yeah, she's taking care of things in the wine cellar at the moment. Yeah.
Okay. How's the Golden Mile thing going?
Yeah, well, we know we've got 2 or 3 vintages from the Golden Mile. I mean, I've sold one of my vineyards there, and so we're working through vintages. We have another 2 or 3 vintages to go.
But as a name brand, are people...
You know, I haven't really seen any... You know, it comes up now and then, and it's people are talking about it. But ultimately, what's in your bottle will do its, you know, talking for itself.
You got to keep this guy away from the marketing people because it's Golden Mile. Come on.
Oh, no, there's many, many, many good areas. And it's you know, that's just one area of many, you know. So it's yeah.
Okay. Do you have any surprises this year from Jentsch?
Do I have any surprises? I'm doing some... fortified work, you know, so we use some Petit Verdot. It's tasting really, you know, good. If you're ever in the cellar, we can do a little tasting how it's coming along.
I can't keep up with you in the cellar.
So the Malbecs are tasting really nice. The Cabs are coming along. Like this year, I'm not sure about Val, but, you know, we thought we were ahead of the game all season. Come August, things slow down.
Yeah.
And everything sort of mellowed out right into November, and we got everything in. It looked really good. They're tasting good, so... Yeah.
You've been listening to a tribute to Chris Jentsch, the co-owner of C.C. Jentsch on the Golden Mile, along with his wife, Betty. What a partnership they were. What a family. They've been farming in that area since the 1920s. He was a true farmer who turned into a winemaker and still had his farmer's instincts about him, treated people well. And people remembered meeting Chris Jentsch. We always traded notes. What a great guy. We've lost a good one. He died April the 2nd. Goodbye, Chris Jentsch. You and your wine made this world a better place. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the best small winery in Canada, Mooncursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Touriga Nationale. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online by mid to late April. Mooncursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of 4 wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Higginbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. The wine club has been selling like crazy. And an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. We're moving on to the business of wine, the business of the Okanagan, the business of VC Wine, frankly. And Laura Kittmer is the communication director of the Wine Growers British Columbia. Well, we lost one of those growers and farmers, one of the great ones. Actually, the family, the Jentsch family, have been farming that particular plot of land in the South Okanagan, the Golden Mile, since 1920. So that's what Chris Jentsch grew up doing, was driving tractor and growing things. And he became a winemaker and an owner. And we lost him last week. And we've just played back three or four of the interviews that we did over the years with him. A true gentleman.
Oh, I would absolutely love to hear those interviews. He was indeed a gentleman and a huge presence in the wine industry and a big part of our history. And I can remember in 2015 was our very first Judgment of BC event. In Vancouver, and of course the CC Jentsch Syrah won first in the flight of Syrahs, and that was certainly an exciting moment for BC. It was a very important benchmarking exercise that we continued for the next 5 years, and of course the very first and the last that you attended, Terry, you attended all five of them, I believe.
Yep.
Was with our dear friend Steven Spurrier. So he was part of that first competition and the last one in 2019.
And we lost him as well. So
it's been a year. Yep. Yes, I'm very sad.
And we're not done yet. So now,
good things ahead.
Good things ahead. Thank you. Onward. Let's talk about the year. We're into spring releases now. You and I are both get every day somebody has a new spring release out. What have you tasted? What are you noticing?
Well, speaking with the wineries, I've tasted a few spring releases now. I've tasted a few of the rosés that are tasting absolutely delicious. And talking to the wineries, we're hearing a slightly smaller crop this year, but right. Oftentimes with a smaller crop, the grapes are, you see quality, very high quality grapes, and that's certainly what we're tasting in the wines, that fresh, lively, crisp acidity, that's a trait of BC wine. And who was I speaking to the other day? Daryl Brooker, winemaker at Mission Hill Winery, and he said he thinks that this is the vintage of the decade. So we're looking at a really strong vintage here, and these spring releases are certainly showing that so far with what I'm tasting. But I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, Terry. You're the expert. What are your thoughts on the new vintage?
The first ones that I tasted were from the Hatch. Oh my goodness, I love what they're doing at the Hatch. First of all, I love the labeling. I love the names. I like the people behind them. And I always believe that if the people making the wines are interesting to me, I'm going to be interested in the wines, because I believe that the wines reflect people's completeness, their sense of humor, how they view wines. And so the Hatch, to begin with, I just love their rosé. And by the way, let's just compare some notes here. This whole idea that when the sun comes out and it warms up, it becomes rosé season. I understand that. But some of us, me included, and my wife Meg, we never stop drinking rosé. We drink rosé throughout the winter. It gets us through the winter.
I think rosé definitely falls in that category for me as well. Similar to sparkling wine, the myth that you have to have something to celebrate, to pop open a bottle of sparkling, that just doesn't... sparkling is something I'm happy to drink any time of the year, any occasion, and rosé is the same.
Okay, you asked me some names of the niche
Wine Company were kind enough to send along a couple of whites and two Pinot Noir. They're a Pinot house now, officially. And they make small lots. They're not making a lot of it. And you know that many wine fans are particularly interested in the chase. They're interested in going to a winery that makes 59 cases of such and such a wine and getting their hands on it. And so a big high five to the Niche Wine Company. Crown and Thieves. Oh, my goodness. The same. It's the hatch, of course. Crown and Thieves. Crown and Thieves. They built themselves this amazing building, and they're fully in, fully hands-on in, and they're welcoming people. Everybody's shipping a lot of wine out of there. Hold on. Oh,
this is a new winery. Yeah.
Well,
what have you tried?
Crown and Thieves, of course, is part of the Hatch conglomerate, but they've created this sort of building that looks like a castle from the 1500s, but it's in ruins. And they've constructed it almost like a film set. It's fantastic. People are going to want to stand there and just take that in. It's quite remarkable. Barche Brothers, Michael Barche, South yeah. Okanagan. Oh my goodness, he's making such great wines. And Lock and Worth. Not only Lock and Worth, like Nickel, we know Nickel for Syrah, and we know them for their Pinot Gris, which is literally famous. But Lock and Worth, who are connected, I'm just tasting now. I think there's three different Cab Francs. Cab Franc rosés, and they're all different shades. I may be imagining that there's three of them, but there's two for certain, but I haven't gotten to the end of the box yet. I'm very impressed with Lock and Worth and Nickel and the Barche boys in the South. And the Vieux-Pin. They have releases coming, and I believe there'll be a knock on the door tomorrow. And then we'll be tasting Le Vieux-Pin and Severine and Pint, those wonderful wines that she's creating. Oh, Anthony Buchanan, anything mm-hmm. that he's doing, anything that mm-hmm. he's doing, I want to taste. Okay, so
I tried one of his wines at Waterfront Wines, actually, and it was, what was it now? Was it a Semillon?
It was
delicious.
Wait a minute. You have to try his Pinot Blanc.
I know.
Frankly, I think Pinot Blanc gets shortchanged, and it's an introduction to wine for someone. But this is none of those things. He's taken Pinot Blanc and he's made it big with texture, with incredible mouthfeel. And I'm going, it's a Pinot Blanc, for God's sake. Holy smoke! This is really good. Really good.
Okay, I will try it. I don't know where to get my hands on it.
Neither.
I might have to call it.
Okay, so that's cool. And I've got lots of wineries, of course. Enrico, south of me in the Cowichan Valley, I like what they're doing.
Great.
I love Moon Cursor, and I love their wines. And Hillside, Kathy over at Hillside. I love Hillside wine. So,
good.
Okay, so now what about events this year? What are you able to do with the COVID restrictions and the lockdowns? Are things going to open up, do you think?
We're certainly not seeing anything opening up as we speak. Sounds like the vaccinations are rolling out there in Vancouver and here as well. So that is certainly a good sign. And let's just hope for some fall events in coming up this spring. We usually host our spring release tasting and our big spring trade show, which unfortunately we'll have to just save until hopefully the fall, and we can all celebrate with a glass of wine together shortly. I certainly hope.
All right, what else is going on?
So this spring we've got BC. April is BC Wine Month. Fourth year in the running, the government of BC has declared it once again BC Wine Month, so that's fantastic. We're certainly excited about that. The industry support we've received during April BC Wine Month has just been outstanding year after year, And of course, usually celebrated with organized events and winemaker dinners and tastings and all those in-person connections and just enjoying BC wine. This year, of course, will look slightly different, but the buzz is out there and there's a lot going on. Restaurants, retail stores across BC are celebrating with in-store BC Wine Month displays, wine by the glass, for takeout. Save-On food stores are offering special promotions in their wine departments. Wineries are offering special BC wine promotions to their club members and virtual tastings. And of course, online shipping is still a very popular option for those who just want to enjoy BC wine from the comfort and safety of their home. Many of the wineries are offering online shipping, and it's a great way to get access to all of these wines that we were just discussing, the new spring releases that may not be on shelves yet, and you can get those straight from the winery. So that's a great option.
And there's also the destination app.
That's right, yes. So there's the Wines of BC Explore app, which this spring you can download that app, check out the new release wines. Wineries are updating their listings, what they've got available, their hours of operations, their outdoor experiences, all of that you can find on the Wines of BC Explore app.
Get the app. Make your plans. Don't be disappointed if you can't get in that front door. Make your plans now. So that's what they're doing. Do you have a website you want to send people to?
So winebc.com for more details on how to celebrate BC Wine Month. Check out winebc.com on our social media and follow along with hashtag BC Wine Life and share your posts and enjoying 100% BC wine.
Laura Kittmer, have yourself a great spring release season and spring and then summer and a safe fall. And just have a great year, okay? And speak well of us, and let's get through this together.
Take care, Terry. I look forward to sharing a glass with you soon.
Like tomorrow.
That would be nice.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Terry.
Okay. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. And since they've opened the new Crown and Thieves, it's been a glorious, sheer and utter madness. The success has seen them already sell out of four wines, The Scoundrel Punch, Chenin Blanc, Gewurztraminer, and Broken Wing Merlot. But luckily, the latest bottling run has replenished the stock with new vintages of Winemaker's Wench, Mr. Higginbotham Chardonnay, the new Little Nipper Pinot Gris, and the brand new Pinky Blinders Rosé. The wine club has been selling like crazy, and an obvious benefit is one active membership means you are a VIP at all of their locations. All the details at thehatchwines.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tarrega Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online by mid to late April. Moon Cursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com. I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. We're talking craft beer now. There's a documentary coming the 13th of April, just a couple of days from now. It's called... I love this. It's called Brewmance, and it's the work of Christo Brock, who we're going to talk to for the next couple of segments. He's in Long Beach, California, which is where he's living. He'll explain why he shot there. It's for personal family reasons. But he's going to follow the guys behind Liberation Brewing and also 10 Mile, and then talk to some of the, you know, the famous craft brew founders in the United States of America. There's over 7,000 breweries in America. Portland's crazy, and Canada's not too far behind. So, a conversation with Christo Brock, and this is a documentary that you can see in Canada on Apple TV, iTunes, Google Play, Microsoft Store, and Vimeo On Demand, and it is being released next Tuesday, the 13th of April. Here we go. This documentary made perfect sense to me, that there was a story there to tell. You might as well tell it. You just need the right people. How did you discover your craft brew inner being?
Well, it's funny because when I was searching for my my next film, after I made Touch the Wall, I was actually thinking about making a wine film. And I had actually started making a wine film before I made Touch the Wall, and we said to stop shooting. So, but I was kind of looking to a story that seemed a little bit more American,
all right,
for lack of a better word, because wine is, Americans certainly changed wine in the way, you know, they use the varietals to sort of, headman their wines. But beer, I kind of felt like the Americans had a much bigger influence in how beer has changed in the last 40 years. And the other thing is that, beer is everywhere, whereas wine is in the winemaking regions.
Sure.
In Europe, it might be more prevalent that everybody has a glass of wine with dinner, but
of course
not. Once I had a friend who was a home brewer named Tom Hoke. He told me about one of these homebrew club meetings and how, you know, people brought their beers and the brewers would talk about how it was made, and then they would share it around and everybody taste it and everybody would give them feedback. And I thought, wow, what a great way to learn about making good beer.
Sure.
And then he told me that one of the home brewers at his club was going to open up a craft brewery. And so we went there. It turned out to be a place called Smog City down in Torrance, California. And I was floored. I mean, the beers that he had on tap were all interesting and unique and different, and had all these flavors and tastes to them.
And you had to keep asking, what was the name of that? I don't understand. What are you saying? What language are you talking? Because they were talking a different language, a selling point language. What year was this?
Oh, that was 2016.
Okay. As a wine fan, I'm sure you have heard the term garagiste, which came out of France, of course, and parts of Italy. And there's a garagiste movement in the BC wine industry that I absolutely love. Under 2,000 cases is the bar, and they are, you know, it was a bit of a piss off term from the French, saying, oh, they're garagiste, oh, they don't make good wine, they're garagiste. But that movement took off in our wine business. That's another story needs to be told. And I am attracted to them because of their passion and their commitment and their, we're going to do this or we're going to bust our balls, one or the other, right? So I'm seeing the same thing with the craft breweries. They are, when you show that, you show the conflict, you show guys walking out of stand-up meetings, families putting their name on everything. I mean, it's an extremely passionate business. You just had to capture that.
Pleasure for me was being able to see these guys that were my main subjects, sort of go through this, and allow that, let me witness it.
He is director Christo Brock, and his new documentary called Brewmance comes out on the 13th of April. You can see it on Apple TV, iTunes, of course, Google Play, Microsoft Store, Vimeo On Demand. It's well worth your time. I spent 4 years in San Francisco, and the first beer, I drank a lot of wine, of course, because I got that close to Napa. But the first beer that I discovered was Anchor Steam. And so I was really interested in the fact that was your starting point, Anchor. That's what they told you on camera. Anchor Steam started something. What did they start?
So I came to San Francisco in 1989, and I got a job at a jazz bar, and they said, and we have Anchor Steam on tap. And I was like, what's that? But I mean, you know, it was just this really good beer, but it was kind of revolutionary at the time. And so the more I got into it, the more I realized that, Anchor Steam was one of those transitional breweries.
Yeah.
They were pretty much like the Lone Wolf from 1967 onwards. And these things happen incrementally, right? Craft beer people didn't snap their fingers and they had really crazy IPAs. It happened originally where someone was trying to make beer the old-fashioned way. the inefficient way,
yeah.
As Sam Calandrini says. And then once that was sort of the proof of concept was there, then you had other brewers like Ken Grossman of Sierra Nevada and some of these other people who were like, oh, you know what? That can work. And that was really important to prove that people would drink a beer that was different, that didn't taste like all those conventional big beers.
You needed to tell the story through the eyes and the voice of a couple of brewers. You need to get inside their breweries, their workspace, even from the ground up. Like you chose 10 Mile and you chose Liberation. Why them?
Because they were available. Well, it just happened that I showed up to the Long Beach Homebrewers Club meeting, and I was looking around going like, oh, well, these guys is going to start a brewery soon, because they're like, oh, I have a movie. And then someone asked Dan Sundstrom, so Dan, how's your brewery going? I was like, aha, there's one of my guys. And then Dan Sundstrom led me to Dan Regan and Eric and Michael from Liberation. And then I was like, oh, okay, cool. Now we have like contrast. Different stories going on here, but also something that was going to happen in my lifetime.
Sure. Was there anybody who didn't want any part of you?
So, I mean, one of the sort of the ethos of craft beer is like this hardcore, anti-authoritarian, yeah, independent mentality.
Yeah.
But it also happened right around the time that I started making this film that a lot of the big breweries were selling themselves to big beer, and people were making very expensive acquisitions. So there were a couple. First off, I didn't want to include those entities in the film, because sure, that's a whole different story.
Yeah,
you know, that's an economic story, and I wanted to tell the story of the evolution of taste and flavor. And so there were some people who like didn't want to be part of the story because they knew what would come up. But also I really wanted to focus on those stories where the founder was the brewer, right? So that, yeah, there was a strong connection between like,
exactly,
he was a home brewer and then founded a brewery. So that's why Ken Grossman is like a story, you know, Jim Cook and Larry Bell, these guys, they would make beer in their basement, and then they decided to sell it, and they made this kind of these empires out of their beers.
I wrote down scaling up problematic. Can you explain that to the audience?
Yeah, well, it's a difference between being like an amateur and a professional. An amateur gets used in a negative way
it
a lot
does,
of times,
yes. But
an amateur is really just someone who does it for the love of it. As soon as that component changes from love to profit, it's a whole different world.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you can't just make whatever beer you want, whenever you want. You have to make your batch on a Monday so that it's ready, it's fermented, it's ready to go in 2 weeks because you're going to run out. Doesn't matter if you hate making that beer. It doesn't, you know. And you're right, scaling up is challenging, right? Because you can make a little batch on the stove, but when you're talking about 500 gallons or 10 barrels, you know, you're like, that's a lot of beer. If you mess that up, you're out a couple grand.
Dan Regan, I loved. I knew the band Real Big Fish because I've spent my life in the music business. And and when you say, you know, he spent his life on the road, he did. He really did. He wasn't there at the beginning, but he filled in this space, and then he tapered off at the end. And he was on the road for a long time. So this was his retirement, so to speak, but he was going to work his ass off in getting off the road. That was a good, that was nice to have that music in there, to have that component. And I really liked his attack on the business, how he went at it.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny. So an earlier cut of the film, we didn't have that scene where he gets up in the morning and he gets his kids ready and shuffles them out the door and goes off to work. And people thought like, oh, Dan Regan, rich retired rock star. Now he's just buying a brewery. And we realized, oh no, whoa, this is a bad misapprehension. So we had to put that in. And I mean, you know, he he's blue collar. He goes to work every day. He punches a clock because, and he's trying to start a brewery beside that. And yeah, really good dude. I mean, but it's also sort of proof that like it's hard work. It's like roll up your sleeves, hard labor, incredible hours to start your own business.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor. Lots of new wines coming, which is a good thing, since they've sold out of everything but a little bit of Dead of the Night and the award-winning Tariga Nacional. The new wines will be available for sale in the tasting room and online by mid to late April. Moon Cursor will continue with appointment-only tastings, but will accommodate walk-in customers whenever possible. Because of the expected lower-than-normal yields of 2019, they will have less wine for sale this year than they normally would, and they're encouraging everyone, including the club members, to stock up now rather than later. All the details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. Spring bottling date is fast approaching. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite. Recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that a couple of mix and match sales are on. They're slowly opening the tasting room up. Currently Wednesday to Saturday, 12 to 4. Starting in April, it'll expand to 5 days a week from 10 to 5, and live music will start in April, Saturdays only. You can find all the details at EnricoWinery.com. We're talking to Christo Brock, the director of Brewmance. I know that when you went to the Beer Awards show with that audience, you, the filmmaker, would love to have had a boffo ending.
Yes, I would have. I really wanted that.
But you did leave it in because, because in fact, it did show us that not every story is going to end up like, you know, Hollywood. There's another year to be had. And then, you know, you got to keep pounding away. You'll get that gold medal or the bronze or the silver or whatever, but not that year.
Yeah. And we might be spoiling it a little bit for people who haven't seen the movie, but, it's the Great American Beer Festival. The beer competition is sort of the pinnacle of any brewer's validation within the industry. If you win an award at Great American Beer Festival, you got the laurels.
You can
That's
sell
it.
Beer. Yeah.
That's it. But one of the reasons I thought it was important to leave it in was that it shows the breadth of craft beer, that there are so many beers out there and there are so many brewers. And so hopefully this just shows you like, wow, craft beer is everywhere. And it's huge.
7,000 breweries, over 7,000 breweries in the U.S.
Something like that.
And where is, why Long Beach? Just because that's where you were?
Because I live there. Because I have a young family. I have a 10-year-old now and he was 5 when I started. And I was like, well, the last film my wife was like, I would really like to see you more and I'd like you to participate in your child's upbringing. So I was like, okay, maybe I can find a project that I can actually make.
There you go.
Spend most of my time in town. It's actually been wonderful.
But is it one of the hot spots now? I mean,
there's a good beer scene there. I wouldn't necessarily call it a hot spot.
Portland. Portland's crazy.
Portland is like, San Diego. There's certain parts on the East Coast. But it's just like every other place that like craft beer has sort of gone everywhere.
Yeah.
And I want to just apologize to all of my Canadian friends for, as one reviewer has called me, the annoying jingoistic motif of the film. But I have to explain a little bit.
Yeah.
So I basically have claimed craft beer as like an American.
Sure.
But part of it is it's a little bit of a political statement here. Because when I started making the film, there were people saying that we needed to make America great. And what I found in the making of the film and delving into the craft beer world, that like America is already great.
Yeah.
Look at craft beer.
Yeah.
So I don't mean to say that Canadians aren't making fabulous craft beer, because I know they are. But it was a little bit of a statement there.
A little flag waver there. That's true. The wine business, I'll relate it back again to the wine business. We were wondering,
actually, people, I had winemakers and had owners saying, we're going to lose wineries along the way because of the pandemic and because everything's being shut down. But the ones that were online got to sell wine by the caseload as fast as they could send it. And it saved many of our wineries. What have the craft guys gone through with this?
Yeah, it's a lot harder because, you know, a lot of the beer that is consumed on premises. And it's just harder to put beer into a growler or cans and get them. And you got to understand that a lot of these breweries don't have distribution. And that's the point.
Yeah.
Right? You buy the beer at the tap room. And that's where it's fresh. That's where it tastes best. Maybe you can get some cans there, but you know, it's a whole different economic structure. So I think it's been really brutal for a lot of these craft brewers to weather the downturn. They're down to 25% of, you know, revenues and traffic.
We're talking to Christo Brock, the director of Brewmance. So what's happened to a 10 Mile?
So 10 Mile is rolling. They've opened up that other place, Steelcraft. They're just opening up. Long Beach is just opening up again. So they're just about ready to go to 50% capacity.
And Liberation, how are they doing?
They're okay. They got hit really hard because they only have that one. So I think they're going to survive. Once things open up, I think they'll prosper.
Let me throw you under the bus. Your top three tastes that you had, because I know you had to taste along the way.
Oh, man. There are a lot of them. I mean, I'll tell you the top three. I'll tell you just places that come to mind. I mean, going up to Russian River's place up in Santa Rosa.
Right.
This is a pretty special place. Meeting Jim Cook in his barrel room. He was sitting there at 9 o'clock in the morning. We're sharing beers. That made the interview a lot more palatable. Talking to Larry Bell, that was a lot of fun too. He's a hoot in Michigan, and it was fun making this film, and it was fun like drinking a lot of beer.
Did they put your who's going to be showing the documentary here in Canada? Did they give you that list?
I think actually the easiest way to do it is to go to iTunes, because iTunes is worldwide. But I think it's also going to be available on some of the other platforms. If there's any questions, people should just go to the website, brewmancemovie.com.
Exactly.
And we'll be able to steer you from there.
I think
Only available for wherever you buy or rent movies. It's not available.
I think Vimeo on Demand was in there as well. So I'll put those on the website. Thank you for the Brewmance, which when I look up the meaning of it means falling in love, not so much with the opposite, but the beer at the same time.
May we all fall in love with our beer.
Shoot the documentary on the winery that you wanted to shoot, or the wine business, because it's a good story out there.
Well, I think I should come up to BC and do some research.
Well, you have to, because people don't realize that we have an incredible wine industry here, and most of it never gets out of the province because we drink it all. It's really good.
Oh, that's the other secret of good wine, too. The good stuff never leaves the
property. Never leaves. But now the French Boutonneau are coming in and making wines in BC. They've found their winemakers. We're going to be good. Now, away you go. Thank you for this, and congratulations. Have a great opening, and knock them dead.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Thank you, Christo. He is director Christo Brock, and his new documentary called Brewmance comes out on the 13th of April. You can see it on Apple TV, iTunes, of course, Google Play, Microsoft Store, Vimeo On Demand. It's well worth your time. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Enrico Winery in the Cowichan Valley. Spring bottling date is fast approaching. They're very excited about their white wine spring release, Pinot Gris The Shining Armor. Always a crowd favorite. Recent winner of a gold medal at the Okanagan Best of Varietal Awards. That new release is going to be one of the hits of the summer. And of course, their crowd favorite, Tempest Ortega. Just a note that a couple of mix and match sales are on. They're slowly opening the tasting room up. Currently Wednesday to Saturday, 12 to 4. Starting in April, it'll expand to 5 days a week from 10 to 5. And live music will start in April, Saturdays only. You can find all the details at EnricoWinery.com.